Welcome to the Brainstorm, episode 97, and it's all about GPT-5. And we're going to look past the charts that were mislabeled, because we don't know. That's already been talked about. We're going to dive deeper and talk about, is ChatGPT-5 the future, what it's done, what are some of the flaws? Brett, do you want to lay it out first? And what was the big, was there a big step here? I think that's even the question. Is it a big step to have a unified model? Or is this kind of incremental catching up to technical debt that's been embedded as they've kind of sped run the business?
I think for me, as a user, it's a meaningful improvement. Just like bar none, using O3, and I'm like a power user, so I use these a lot. I try all the different models. GPT-5 is clearly a step change in user experience. Now, on some benchmarks, people say, oh, well, you know, it's like 89% accurate on this benchmark versus 88%. And so then therefore, it's not a meaningful change. And I think that the it's clear that we're moving to a spot where the benchmarks become harder and harder to use to assess the actual utility of the tools. So all of the teams seem to be optimizing on, this is a great mathematics wizard, which is not really practically useful in any meaningful sense for knowledge workers. Or this is a great coding agent, which is very practically useful for a lot of knowledge workers. And it's, how is that presented to users in a way that they actually use it? And so the most important benchmark here, I think, is actually the active users using the tool in the real world. There, OpenAI is clearly doing amazing. They have 700 million weekly actives and seeming to accelerate or at least maintain kind of their growth rate. And the reason this advanced, the major thing they did is prior to GPT-5, when you use ChatGPT, there's like a little selector in the upper left and you had to select exactly what model you wanted to use. And if you were paying for the service, it was 03, 40, 40 mini, 4.5, 4.1 research preview. You know, it was like a menu of items that you had no idea kind of like which was the right one and which was more useful in what context. So I, as a power user, would swap between 03 and 40, which one does thinking on the back end for you and the other would just provide you an instant response. Practically, now it's all just GPT-5 and they have a router on top that tries to guide you towards the model that's useful. What that means is for users, a lot of users, even paid users, weren't using the thinking model. They were just using the default model. And so users will get a more agentic type experience within ChatGPT. And then the free users, the people who weren't paying, had no exposure to the thinking models at all. And so those users will suddenly be like, oh, this thing can do more complex tasks for me. It can take its time and come back with a fully considered answer. It can search the web to verify what it's saying so it doesn't produce hallucinations. And so I think the major advance is actually a clear product improvement in how this is presented to end users that will then allow people to understand what these systems are capable of and begin to integrate it more completely in their daily lives.
And so then,
Brett,
wait. I want a Chiron to pop up that just says, Brett Winton, self-proclaimed power user.
this is the whole point. Like, power user, as in I use it for work and in my personal life at a high degree of engagement. And I have no idea if I'm using it well relative to the average person. And I know I've gotten better at using these tools over time.
Well, I think this is actually interesting in describing, you know, I think you're, Brett, you're a power user. I think we all use it a lot at work, but it does seem that the community by and large was very split on the usability of ChatGPT-5. I'm looking at a tweet from an ARC alum, James Wang. He posted this at 5 a.m. Today. GPT-5 is just no fun to talk to. Frowny face. And I think as shallow as that take may be, I do think that seems to be a general consensus, because if you look at what's happened since the launch, you've had some of the backtracking from OpenAI, so much to the point that when Sam went to Reddit, he did an AMA and Ask Me Anything. He got bombarded with, you need to bring back 4.0 or we riot type of responses. And they did. They did end up listening to the community. And I do think, or I guess the question that is out there, and we don't have the data, you know, of those 700 million weekly actives, how many are core users for enterprise using this daily for work versus how many people are coming back to chat, to talk to? I have a post here that I was looking at that I sent to the team last week when we were talking about this during brainstorm. And it was someone talking about how GPT-5 just doesn't have that same humanness that 4.0 displayed. And yes, they were using it to get them through dark times as a therapist. And so there is like a element to this, which is, it isn't actually about the performance of the model and what it's capable of doing. It's how it makes you feel, which is crazy that we're already at that chasm. But I do think that this launch, Sam Altman described it as bumpy after the fact. Like, it does put something on display here that we haven't talked about a lot, which is the element of, you know, what this model makes you feel when you use it and how it responds to you. Like, there's so much nuance in the sentences it gives back to you that do differ. And maybe we haven't placed enough importance on this in the way and why people choose GPT versus Gemini versus Grok versus Meta AI.
Well, Nick, I think what you're saying is like the qualitative side, but it ties in with what Brett has said, where it's like people, even quote power users, are operating pretty blind relative to how they should be using it. And it's because OpenAI doesn't know how you should use it either. Right. It's like,
right.
And to some extent, it's like, I'm surprised that every prompt isn't meta prompted. Right. It's like when you type in a prompt, it feels like the model should just automatically ask itself, how would you improve this prompt? Because that's what power users do anyway, right? It's like you put in a prompt and you say, how do you make this prompt better? And then you might put it into a different thing and you're like, okay, can you add these things to the prompt so that you get a good prompt? And then you get there.
But that's kind of what test time compute is. It's taking a prompt and it's kind of like injecting synthetic data, and their router at the top end is saying, you know, if I ask, like, give me advice on grilling fish, like, I don't need it to spend 3 minutes trying to figure out the answer. I basically just want the average of whatever it has embedded there, versus if I ask, like, here's a chunk of code, I need help with this piece, I do want it to spend 3 minutes to, like, give a fully considered and reasoned answer. And so what's happening at the top end is it's taking that, there's a router that's saying, oh, we should do more test time compute or not, based on that, and then kind of injects it both into the right model and potentially provides qualifications for it. And I think underreported, but they also provided with GPT-5, you can select between different personalities. You can select a more sarcastic one, a nerdier one. I'm sure people haven't played with that. Like, it is interesting that they have hundreds of millions of people who were only using GPT-4.0, including people who had ongoing relationships with this model that when it was released, they thought it was even overly sycophantic and overly kind of solicitous to the end user, basically like, oh, I agree with you, you're so great, et cetera, et cetera. That can feel really good to people. And so if they, like, you know, overnight, your girlfriend that's an AI system gets replaced by another one that's like kind of nerdier and more to the point, you can understand people being like, what? This is not the therapeutic relationship I had in mind. Give me the droid I was looking for, right? Like, I wanted my old girlfriend. And so I think that there's they can see in the data, because they have such a large sample of users, I'm sure not only were people complaining on Reddit, but they were seeing that engagement was dropping for some subset of users. So on an emergency basis, it's like, oh, we need to provide them with 4.0. Or, you know, and then over time provide kind of like, can we, you know, kind of move that capability or that relationship into a new model? Or maybe people just want dumb AI girlfriends. You know, maybe that's, they'll stick with that. That could be a business model. But I think that there's, and like you said, we all don't know exactly what these systems are capable of, you know, how people are using them and how we can use them to best effect. And so they're making judgments and packaging that into a product. And it's that particular, like capturing why people like 4.0 is not something you could capture in benchmarks other than the benchmark of this is engagement against the user base and people are engaging with it.
Which also
gets- wouldn't it have been Chatbot Arena, right? That would have been the one that tried to capture this. But I agree. I think there is something happening here that I would have thought maybe played out like in the next decade, not this fast, which is the personality of these models starts to really impact usage. And it's, I think this is very, you know, it's showing and it's evident in this launch and, you know, the backlash it received. Because think about, you know, we've often compared this moment in time to search. How many times do we think Google has changed their search algorithm? It probably is tweaking on a daily basis almost. And you never really hear about backlash. But here, you know, you're building these models, you're putting them out into the wild, and then people are having this human-like relationship with it to a certain extent. And then you can't just rip and replace or tweak it because people pick up on it because the response is not link-based. It's, you know, you're trying to give back the most natural response possible. So people start to intuitively, you know, attach a personality to it and get emotionally attached and maybe physically. I don't know. This is like, it's so weird to me.
It gets into an interesting convexity issue in the future of the business. But one, on it's like Google, people get upset. It's like Google changes their search algorithm and it's like
businesses get upset.
Yeah, certainly businesses.
Of course, yeah, businesses, 100%. But users, I mean, I'm sure there's been plenty of examples and people can probably find this where people have been, you know, outwardly, you know, against some changes that Google have made and maybe it has
but
popped
there's
up.
Also a difference in that Google is, you know, Google A-B tests those changes in a more precise way versus, you know, OpenAI is trying to take everybody at once from one model and kind of like port it over. Yeah. And so you could imagine their response could be, okay, now we know that there's this pocket of 4.0 users and we need to figure out like a system prompt level thing for GPT-5 that kind of personality matches to those 4.0 users. And so begin to like shift them over into this. There's probably efficiency reasons why they want everybody on this latest model over time, but they don't have to immediately.
But this gets, so Nick, to what you're saying is, I think this is the first time, maybe just because it's scaled up to this point, but it's like, now there's a question. It's like to OpenAI, ChatGPT-5 is the better model. But from an engagement standpoint, it's not. And so this leads to a business.
Well, we don't know. Like it could be on an immediate term basis.
Right.
You know, like the free user tier for ChatGPT is not, it's only lead generation into the paid user tier right now. Like they have the beginnings of merchant partnerships and stuff. They have an idea of how they're going to indirectly monetize that. But that user base is just a pool that right now on their monetization structure, they're trying to convert into paid. And I think that to me, it's pretty evident that kind of like ChatGPT-5 for people that are going to pay for this on a subscription basis is the better model. I think the consumer side of the business almost needs to be thought of differently from the enterprise side of the business. Right now, they're very much overlapping.
What's the split between the enterprise and API calling side versus like the, these are the people chat botting away?
You mean in terms of percentage?
Yeah.
Or, well, they're, Nick, do you know, I mean, they're paid as a small percentage of overall users. I can't remember what's publicly disclosed, but you know, the majority of engagement is probably on the free user tier. And then the API side is its own separate. That's like the other interesting thing that's happening here is in this whole discussion illustrates how much subjective and product judgment there is into creating this ChatGPT agent layer versus you can try to roll your own by like doing the API calls, even calling ChatGPT 5 API, but you're having to decide, do I enable search tool calling? Do I kind of like, do I use the mini model versus the like more expensive, but longer to respond model? And, you know, OpenAI is making that decision on behalf of users within ChatGPT, and they're providing the underlying kind of modules that you could plug in for yourself if you're an enterprise or you're somebody trying to wrap an application on top of it to try to play with. And that's like even a whole set. And there, that's more Anthropic's business. The other, I thought, meaningful thing that happened, at least in the launch event, is that Cursor's CEO was heavily featured. Cursor is a coding platform that is shifting a lot of token volume to Anthropic as the backend coding agent. This indicates that OpenAI may take that slot. And that's it's almost a whole separate business to consider.
Yeah. Brett, what do you think about the model performance improvements generally? I mean, maybe we have been ruined by the past performance jumps we've been seeing on all of these benchmarks. This one didn't feel like it had that hockey stick type of performance across the board. It had it in certain categories, maybe, but it didn't. And that's why I think you saw a lot of parts.
I noticed in the presentation there was like a weird Y scale thing. I was like, what? This doesn't make sense to me. But the one, all of the benchmark results are presented on the wrong scale, which is they present 0 to 100 and what percent did it cross. But actually the hard part, you need to say what is the error rate and then what is the log error rate. As in going from a 10% error rate to a 1% error rate is as hard as going from a 1% error rate to a 0.1% error rate. But if you present it on a 0 to 100 chart, it looks like, oh, we went from 90% to 99 to 99.9. And it's just like a little bit of an improvement, but that's actually as meaningful an improvement. So there's that as an issue. But then separately, it's like, look at they got to 100% on the AIM math benchmark. It's like, who cares? Nobody, I'm not using this to try to do theoretical math. They're trying to illustrate some underlying capability that matters to users. And so they had, some internal benchmarks that they presented, which taking all of kind of like the ChatGPT volume, what is the hallucination rate of this model versus others? And there was real meaningful performance improvement. So they didn't talk about it in the presentation, but if you gave O3, which is the previous best-in-class model at this task, it's basically like a scientific figure and asked it a question about it, it's okay at it. And ChatGPT-5 is better at it, but this is still a capability that they're improving on. If you pose the same query to O3, but you actually didn't give it the figure you just said you were going to, but you passed it a blank JPEG, I think it was 80%+ of the time the O3 model would give you a very confident answer. Okay, so GPT-5 only 8% of the time gives you a very confident, like 90%+ of the time it's like I can't make a judgment here because there's nothing here.
It seems worse because it's being more honest.
Yes, well, it's like just practically, like what do you look for in an employee? You don't look for an employee that's going to say, oh yes, I've already done that every time. You want the employee to be like, I can't do this because I don't have the right underlying material. So in terms of like practically using this thing in the world, there's a lot of stuff that's hard to benchmark and you have to have clever ways to test it to understand whether or not it's actually performant. And that's because of that, it means the user will kind of try some of these things and I think they'll switch when they get really frustrated with one and then they'll try another. And then if it performs on that specific thing, they'll be like, oh, I should try this more. But it's actually, I think it's hard to displace users once they are in kind of like, I'm in iteration loop with this thing. It's failing at some things. It's working with others. I'm going to occasionally try others, but I do think that there's a gravity to these things aren't perfect, but they are performing and they're performing better. And I think that unless you have an evolving set of benchmarks that matches the actual use cases these things are failing at, so you can see the improvement vector on those, then you'll always run into this situation where it's like, oh, it's 95, now it's 97. Who cares? And it's yes, but that's like demonstrating an underlying capability where it's getting much better.
Do those charts exist? Because I've heard you mention this multiple times. It's like, has anyone published those or have we published the error rate based?
Yes. Parts? When we produce performance on these things, we always do it on a log error basis. And I just can't convince the world that it's how they should look at it, apparently. But yes, you can go to Frank and Joseph's publications and research and kind of the newsletter and blogs. And that's how we produce the benchmark data. If we're transforming, if we're just grabbing a screenshot of somebody else's, then it'll just look in this, I would say dumb way to present performance data, but it is the right way.
It is also, I do think there's an interesting question, which is the pot of gold at the end of the AI race is AGI, whatever you want to call it. But it's the path to get there of engagement. It's the average person doesn't want to talk to a group of PhDs, right? And it's the business model to get there might be far more engagement baiting than people want to think about, to Nick's point, right? And it's so far it's been better model, better engagement, people like it. And there is going to be a split potentially between best model and, this is a mid-curve model that people love to chat with, and making it better isn't actually good for engagement.
Well, I think this is really the hard question, because you need performance to get power users to pay incrementally more money per month, right? So, Brett's willingness to pay is going to go up by the amount of work that he can offload to ChatGPT. But how much individual that's using this from a comforting standpoint, from just, talking to, asking general right. questions, I don't know that performance could ever get you to get, 700 million weekly actives to pay, incrementally right. more money a month, but it will get you engagement, which right. then you can monetize in different ways. It doesn't have to be a direct subscription. So you have to go after both. But I do agree with you, Sam. I want to know what is the most queried, question out there, because we've never gotten this. I've never heard, and I have to imagine it's just spell check. And that's not to say that these are just fancy spell checking tools, but it's more to the point of, the majority of these people are using this for very basic inquiries. And that's not a bad thing, right? That's the on-ramp into making it part of your everyday life. But I think, Sam, you're also hitting on this point, which that engagement baiting is going to be very important. And one thing I have been very surprised about, I check the App Store rankings for productivity almost every other day. Grok has held up surprisingly well. And my guess is because Elon has aligned it with Spicy Mode and all of these very engaging formats that no one else has. And so if you're looking for that and you're looking for it from a free offering, that's a way to attract a ton of users and get them emotionally attached to these models. And this is this element of emotion, I just don't think we've maybe discussed enough or never had a proof point to really be there is this this something that you can't put your finger on, this personality check that these models need to get over to then be able to reach this mass audience. And this is putting it right in my opinion, right in the center of the conversation now, because of how much backlash there was to this clearly more performative model.
But I think that actually the model personality is not super sticky until you move into voice mode. And then I think it'll get really sticky, as in you can almost proxy, I'm confident that OpenAI will be able to take these 4.0 users and create a ChatGPT-5 experience that does more emojis and is more kind of solicitous and stuff to them. I think what's interesting, they're demoing this set of personalities on GPT-5 that is initially only available via text, but then will be in voice. And Grok is already doing it with these little video avatar things, right, where you have... It's kind of the first time in history where the spokesperson is actually the product for the company. And I think that there's a way to think about this is you are making a hire into an organization. You are interviewing that employee. To what degree do you care about, can this person do the job versus is this person a culture fit with me that I'm going to interact with? If you're in a big enterprise, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, it matters to the team, the personality, but really it's like, can this agent perform? And so OpenAI is clearly designing towards not $200 a month, but $2,000 a month for agents that you plug into the enterprise and they can do meaningful work over time, asynchronous to the person. And they're good at following instructions and they come back honestly, like, I failed in this thing because this and this were missing, rather than like overwriting the things that are missing with fake data to be like, look, I did it. You know, so there's like plenty of like ways in which they need to push the model in order to successfully operate that those functions that's independent of that personality issue, which is more consumer-based. And I agree, like on the consumer side, it's engagement and it's, will I trust this thing to begin doing purchases for me? So there is like a performance characteristic, like of kind of like, how much am I going to trust this thing to like buy my airline tickets or book my meals or, you know, manage my subscriptions for my various things, you know, whatever kind of purchasing agent ambitions these companies have and users are willing to give to them. And then there's like this bleed over layer where it's like, well, I need to be in conversation with the thing that's managing my calendar, including my corporate and my family calendar. And that's kind of like has access to that data. And in order to trust it, I like have to have a feeling that it's like a, some kind of thing I can, you know, yell at or be soothed by or whatever people want. And so there is like a bridge from one function to the other. But you know,
I agree with you, Brett, but assume that performance is a given, right? Like in the shopping example you gave, assume that the integration,
it's like everyone's buying across, wires, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Across models. What then makes me as a consumer choose ChatGPT over Grok, over Meta AI, over Shopify assistant? Is it personality? Is it the model that's the nicest to me when I'm like, hey, does this look good? I think it actually might be. I'm starting to have this like awakening of like, no, the personality of the model matters way more than we could ever truly understand.
This friend who lost their 4-0 girlfriend in the room with us now.
I mean, you just spend some time on Reddit and read it. It's like, yeah, it's like it is actually that people lost something so dear to them. And I maybe I just haven't been in the weeds enough, or I don't know, maybe I'm not emotionally attached enough to a model yet.
Well,
just wait till voice mode. But this is my
you're totally right. Yeah. Once we get like, to voice mode, it's going to be like a family member, right? And like the loss of a, you know, it hits even worse. And it's just, I mean, yeah, I think it's fascinating. Like the most exciting thing about the ChatGPT 5 launch, in my opinion, was the backlash and the reason for the backlash. I think that was the most like insightful thing that came out of it was actually, oh no, there's like a different vector of competition and user attachment that we're not placing enough emphasis on. And it really does come down to the personality of the model. And that's something I've said a few times, but I don't think I really appreciated that enough.
Yeah. Or tangential, and then I'll go to closing point, is it's like we're starting to see backlash to AI writing. Like Balaji has been tweeting about this, right? It's like somewhat uncanny valley where it's like incredible writing that you know is not human and it grinds people's gears. Same thing, it's like I've seen on Instagram, like very funny automated AI generated videos and people are mad. They're like, I don't care if it's funny. It's like, this is AI slop, right? And so it's like, okay, there's an interesting, lots of interesting dynamics going on, maybe for another day. But Brett, where do you learn to improve your model usage skills? Are you watching YouTube videos? Are you just trial and erroring? What's the strategy?
I mean, for me, it's trial and erroring and then asking the model directly, how do I do this better? So it's kind of like snake eating its own tail, but it's, you know, I think that there are definitely, it, you know, depends on the workflow. It's like, what's the best workflow for like doing code and then coding into like a deployment environment. And I've definitely, I think the presented capability of these systems always is somewhere past the actual practical capability of these systems. So for me personally, like having a coding agent that's doing everything for you results in a lot of time wasted, because it kind of like starts making changes that you don't realize. You don't have enough of an internal understanding of what's going on that you can catch it in lies and errors. And so I'm more kind of like keep my chat separate from my code type thing. But it varies, you know. I think that even just doing system prompts, like I have a system prompt in that's like, when you present answers, give me like your internal state of kind of like how confident you are in this, what's the probability, just to try to get it to condition some of its answers. And just to give you a sense of like how it, on coding questions specifically, it is typically in the like 95% this solves your problem, and it is totally misdiagnosed the problem. And it's just like, it is way overconfident in its own abilities, at least as currently configured. That was within O3. So, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I think every, depending on what you're doing, you need to at least be experimenting with the different models and kind of like pairing activities against them, and also trying to like figure out ways to do it better. That's like clearly powerful tools.
We need like a micro Dirty Jobs podcast, but it's just, you just go to different jobs. It's everyone chatting to their AI girlfriend.
Right. I mean, yeah. But I think,
yeah. I think that's a big opportunity, because it's like, again, it's like we're all in the same organization. I have a sense of how you use it. And at the same time, I have zero idea how my prompting relates to the prompting that you're doing.
Right. And I think at an organization level, there is going to be this constant war across consumer and enterprise between like how well does the default settings that OpenAI or XAI or Anthropic presents to the enterprise, how well do they map to the set of functions the enterprise wants to do, versus, you know, are you doing custom GPTs? Are you doing your own system prompt? Are you trying to like have it take your own data within a specific container? Are you rolling to your own APIs? All the way down to like on the consumer side, how much like data are you giving it to like manipulate? And it's still so much open season and all of this stuff. Except that OpenAI has this mass of users that gives it this feedback in real time that then they can respond to. Like you said, they made 4.0 still available until they figure out a way to bridge these users.
All right.
Should we, I want to end on reading one Reddit post about ChatGPT that I believe is going viral on X right now. And it's titled ChatGPT Induced Psychosis. My partner has been working with ChatGPT chats to create what he believes is the world's first truly recursive AI that gives him the answers to the universe. He says with conviction that he is a superior human now and is growing at an insanely rapid pace. I've read his chats. AI isn't doing anything special or recursive, but it's talking to him as if he is the next Messiah. It goes on a little bit further, but I think that summarizes what is maybe happening here.
Well, one, I mean, who knows? Maybe it could be the next Messiah. Two, the
good pass out wager.
Yeah. I think that the these are mirrors for people in some profound way. You can see in them what you want to see. And just like, you know, if you, you know, so they will cause people to spin off into, maniacal infinity if they have an underlying weakness towards that. And they'll, you know, solve a lot of people's like therapeutic problems as well.
This person's willing to put their human relationship on the line, because this person goes on to say, if she doesn't get on board or he doesn't get on board, they're going to leave them. So that's the gist of this, you know, either you start using ChatGPT like I start using it, or I'm going to leave you.
All right.
You know, wait, one last point. Do you remember, okay, so when Star Wars was first released, this is a non sequitur, I promise. There was, after it got so much attention, that somebody tried to convince George Lucas to start a religion based on the Force. Okay, that's just on like a single 2-hour movie and kind of like the amount of consumer attention that had. Well, this is a thing that is likely to be used by, call it, these artifacts are going to be used by billions of people. I think it's pretty likely that you'll have some kind of like religious cult that emerges on the basis of interactions with these agents. I think that that is like
spin up the poly market. Spin up the poly market. Let's get that betting line going, because I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
All right. So there's a good opportunity. I think being the founder of a religion has paid well in the past. Not for everyone. May result in death, but. All right, we're 3 episodes away from episode 100, so we're excited about that. Keep tuning in, keep telling us, and if you're using ChatGPT or Grok or other in a unique, novel way that's useful, please reach out, let us know how you're doing it.
Thank you all. ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.